What's this? Another episode of A.E. Read Skiffily, the podcast featuring me and friends reading science fiction stories with sound effects and music. This is the podcast that taps into the imagination of readers and listeners everywhere. So with me today is my wife, Heather. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
So we're not the only ones reading today's story, but we're social distancing. Heather and I, we can sit next to each other because we live together.
Same household.
This episode is the first episode that will also be on YouTube in addition to Stitcher and iTunes and Google Play and all the good places that you get your podcasts. So you'll actually get to see how Heather and I look in our natural environment.
Today's story is, it's called 210 by Ari Marmel, originally published in Foreshadows, a 2012 anthology that comes with its own soundtrack.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, so are you going to put some of the music from the soundtrack on the podcast?
I don't think I have permission to do that.
That's a bummer. But you can listen to the soundtrack separately.
Yeah, you can find it, I think, on YouTube. I was listening to a couple tracks. I think I could play like 30 seconds of it under fair use. So it's time for the story. Mm-hmm. So everyone at home or in your car, go ahead and close your eyes. And
well, not if you're in the car.
No, not if you're driving in the car. And if you were watching and you can see as, you know, reading, then also.
So just be judicious about whenever you close your eyes.
Within reason.
Yes.
But let the audio drama take you to another place. I hate the Unders. Not the people. Got nothing against the people, or at least most of them. Stuck down here. The place. I hate everything about it. It's all grime and shadows, the Unders. The power's sporadic, so even though it was evening topside, it was already midnight here. The walks and the tubes are cracked and still made of cement. Yeah, cement. Even breathing's nasty, with the spillage leaking from above and God knows what sort of old wastes leaching up from below. And even if you can see past the tubes crossing overhead, you can't ever see the sky. Just the glass facades of the ivories stretching up higher than the people here could ever hope to imagine. Yeah. It's depressing is what it is. I don't like being here. I don't like driving through the Unders, and I'd never come down here at all if Pachinko wasn't so generous to his employees. So why was I not only down in the Unders, but on foot? Because Patch is paranoid. That's why. But I guess today, he might have had a reason. So today, he'd had one of his normal guys deliver me here, nowhere near either his place or the client, and I'd take over the rest of the way. I stepped around a corner, coming up on the spot where one of the company peds was supposed to be parked and waiting. And there it was, all right. A Mangjal Motors Huacha 223 with electric purple polymer wheels, snow-white chassis, and two big, ugly, mean-looking guys hovering around it. One of them was standing lookout, the other prying at the bike's wheel locks with a beat-up crowbar. Great. Perfect way to boot the evening. Neighborhood like this, they were probably just some random pirates. But after Pachinko's lecture about how important this run was to the company, I couldn't help but wonder if they were something more. Either way, they saw me coming, and that crowbar, not to mention the old kitchen knife the other guy pulled out from a pocket, looked even uglier than they did. Cheap weapons, the both of them. But cheap will zero you just as dead. I remember when this job was easy. The kind of thing just anyone could do. But damn it, I'm not just anyone. That's why Pachinko asked me to make this run. Hey, guys, I waved with my free hand. I'm gonna need to ask you to step away from my ped before you break something.
What? You best step back, troll.
That was Crowbar, a short, pale, rodent-looking guy. His face was so greasy, I wasn't sure what was dirt and what was stubble.
Aw,
Don't be like that. And besides, do you know who I work for?
You know how much I care.
He turned toward Kitchen Knife, taller, and pretty clearly not the IQ of the pair. His eyes were empty as an unplugged monitor.
Man, zero this guy.
Yeah.
Even as they stepped closer, I raised my other hand so they could see the hefty package I was carrying. I'm with Pachinko's. What do you think's gonna happen if you start pirating his people? None of his competitors operate in the unders. What are your friends gonna say when they find out they've lost Pachinko services and it's your fault? I'm pretty sure I swallowed once, loudly, but I kept that smile stuck to my face. This was only going to work if they took the time to think about it, and if they were what they seemed to be. If not, Kitchen Knife turned to Crowbar, his jaw hanging. Crowbar squinted at me a minute, and then shrugged.
Come on, man. We got better things.
They walked away like it was their own idea, which was fine by me as long as they walked away. I waited until they were pretty well gone before I let myself breathe. I went to the huacha, stuck the package in the case on the back, and knelt to examine the wheel locks. They hadn't bent it too bad. It should still slide. Standing, I threw one leg over the bike. Charlemagne Thursday, my personal iTooth code to activate the transdermals. Yeah, it's nonsense. But it's not like I'm gonna accidentally use the phrase in a normal sentence, is it?
Jimmy?
Yeah, Estelle. It's me. I'm at the ped. Things damn near went besawed before we even got started. But... You hearing me okay? Even with the new networks, reception in the unders was never a sure bet.
Green and blinking, Jimmy.
Awesome. I pulled on my gloves first, then the helmet, and spoke to the bike.
8675309.
Pachinko used to use that code for all his peds. Something to do with classical music, I think. The dash and the headlight started to glow. The bent wheel lock slid up into its casing. But, like I expected, it still worked.
All right, Estelle. I'm about 5 from the tubes. How's the hack coming?
We'll be ready.
You don't sound sure.
Am I telling you how to ride, troll?
I thumbed the switch, and the huacha was moving. I tore through the streets of the unders, moving fast enough that I could hear the wind whipping around me, even after I'd flipped on the helmet's extraneous sound suppression system. I swerved around a few slow-moving cars, some old enough that they still used petrol, and through the midst of an itinerant bazaar, complete with canvas tents, wooden kiosks, and vendors haggling at the tops of very impressive lungs. I don't think the cops would be real thrilled to see me driving like this, but the law doesn't much glance in the direction of the unders until things turn violent. A few twists and turns, scooting around one accident, and I was there, sitting in an E-station parking lot within sight of the tubes.
Estelle?
This could take a while. Oh, Christ, not this. I said it'll be another minute or two.
I smiled, but it was more than my life was worth to tease her about it. I stuck a foot on the ground and waited, and that, unfortunately, gave me time to process. This really wasn't a dangerous job, usually, not with the kinds of runs we made. But tonight, this was a major deal, last minute. More important than what the run was, though, was who the run was for. If Pachinko lost the B1 corporate contract, we were sunk, plain and simple. And considering how many of Patch's competitors would love to see that contract come open, there was a very real chance that someone might want me to have an accident on the way over tonight. Didn't even have to be a major. Just keep me from getting there before 21-0.
Time.
1947.
That's plenty of time, under normal circumstances.
Okay, Jimmy, the bird's talking.
I nodded, relieved. There's a bunch of old military satellites still in decaying orbit, obsolete junkers from the days before Tri-D Optics. Cheaper to just replace them, then let them sit and eventually burn up, than to send crews to upgrade or retrieve them. They're falling apart and about as reliable as retail tech support. But they're stupid easy to hack these days. Script kiddies on their parents' palm tops can do it. So no way it was going to be a problem for Estelle on one of Pachinko's machines. Plus or minus 2 minutes, of course.
Even if the connection stays green, we've only got about 90 minutes of satellite time. After that, it moves out of useful orbit.
If we still need it in 90 minutes, we'll be too late anyway.
You ready?
I'm Pachinko's best, dammit. Yeah, I'm ready.
The PED roared, as much as the electrics ever roar, and I was skimming up the ramp onto the tubes. Cars and the occasional PED whipped past me as I flew along the plastic surface of the tube, sliding between and around the larger traffic. I have no idea why they call them tubes, since they're not closed in. Gotta look that up at some point. Again, the ESSS kicked in. The wind faded to a dull groan, but I could hear the hum of the other vehicles and the watch's proximity ping clear as day. 2, 4, 6 and 20-wheelers, polymer wheels, and old rubber tires, electrics, and a few nukes. I decided I'd better slow a little, at least keep the speed limit visible in my rear view. It's never a good idea to be the fastest guy on the tube, and the last thing I needed was for the cops to tag me, to come home and discover a 1,000-dub fine in my box. All of which was well and good until...
Estelle?
I'm here, Jenny.
4 cars back and 2 lanes to my left. Hunter Green 3-wheel sport. It's a Chrysler Yamamoto Serengeti 575, I think.
I've got it.
Maybe nothing, but he's been with me for several turns now and almost always exactly that far behind. Can you?
All right. He's painted.
It meant she'd marked him in the computer so that the satellite could continue to pick him out of the crowd, either visually or on infrared.
Give him a test.
Cops or no cops, I really poured on the speed, whipping around a delivery van and between a 6-wheel sedan and a blocky GUV. I heard the electrics whining even through the ESSS, and still I kept pushing, but I just wasn't going to get the speed I wanted. Cars and PEDs have gotten a lot safer since the new generation electrics replaced the old nukes. Like the old slogan goes, put a glow in your smile, not in your tank. But they've just never had the same oomph. Nevertheless, I was going faster than everyone else around me on the tube, and that was enough.
He's staying on you. In fact, he's gaining. I think he knows you're on to him.
Obviously, his trike had more power to spare than my PED. Damn Serengetis.
Jimmy?
Ooh, I did not like that tone.
What's wrong?
2 more cars further back, keeping up with the Serengeti.
Shit. What kind?
I can't tell. The link's graying in and out. I can't get any real resolution from the bird.
This was getting better and better. 10 minutes in, and the whole thing was about to go B-sod.
I'm getting off the tube.
You sure? Jimmy,
they're faster than me, Estelle. And I'm not going to outrun them. And the last thing I want is to get into a wreck at these speeds. I'm gonna try to shake them on the sides.
Okay.
She didn't sound so sure. And I wasn't sure. But it's not like I had time to process it. First exit ramp, and I was off. They weren't even trying to hide now. Serengeti still in the lead. They were creeping up on me, but here, I had the advantage. None of us could get to full speed, and I could squeeze between cars that they had to wait for. Glow poles and storefronts whipped past, and with the occasional sharp turn, I got a dizzying view over the edges and into the unders below. But they were starting to fall back. If I could just keep this up a few more...
Jimmy!
I saw it right about when she did. And like Estelle, there wasn't a whole lot I could do. A cream-colored 12-wheeler, crossing ahead of me, suddenly stopped short in the middle of the intersection. Horns and proximity alarms screamed up and down the street, and I slammed on the PED's brakes, trying to turn into the skid, but no matter what, this was gonna hurt. It told me one thing at least. These guys were on their own iTooth or uplink system. No way they could have orchestrated this without real-time comms. Hell, They could have hacked into the same satellite we had for all I knew. The bike was turned completely sideways, leaving trails of polymer across the roadway by the time I slammed into the side of the truck. At about 10 mph. I could have kissed whoever manufactured the watch's brake pads. My left arm and leg ached like, well, like someone had run me into a truck, and I could see that the front shaft was bent all out of alignment. But the ped should still drive if I could fight the tug of the handlebars well enough. And since the other option was hanging around here, not to mention failing to make deadline, I was pretty damn sure I could. Cops wouldn't like me leaving the scene of an accident, but somehow I didn't think the other guys would be hanging around to report it.
Jimmy, are you alright?
At least the eye tooth was still up.
Later, Estelle.
I peeled off down the street where the truck had come from. No way they were getting that monster turned around in a hurry. Unfortunately, that still left room for the Serengeti and one of the smaller follow cars to come after me.
I need to get off the streets. Find some place where I can shake these trolls. Anything.
The picture's getting worse, but yeah, there's an outboy station about a half mile from you. There's a multi-level garage attached to it. You should be able to get lost in there. And if not...
I knew she was thinking. At least maybe they won't try anything with so many witnesses around. Which might have made me feel better, except they'd already tried to run me into a truck in the middle of a busy street. So, I wasn't really sure just how dramatic they were willing to get. If I didn't know just how much damage it'd do to Pachinko to lose the B1 contract, and to my rep as the best in the biz if I didn't deliver, I'd have walked away right then and there. But I did, so I couldn't. Following Estelle's shouted directions, struggling to keep my eyes front and center when all I wanted to do was stare at the rear view, I made for the upway. A few blocks, a few corners, a few near calls as I struggled with the ped and nearly ran into the slow movers in my way. I shot past the sensor at the entrance to the garage, though not so fast that it couldn't register me to debit my account, of course. And then I was skimming up the ramp, taking random turns and dodging pedestrians.
Estelle, where are they? Did they follow me in?
Only then did I really register the fact that she'd been cursing under her breath for the past 30 seconds.
Damn random-ass fuckers. I can't tell. The link's gone completely 4-0. I can't talk to the bird.
Damn it. You know, for a gig this important, Pat should have rented a receiver package on a legit satellite.
Get your case back here uncooked and in one piece. You can flame him for it yourself. Just keep moving, Jimmy. I'm working on it as fast as I can.
That was probably Estelle messing with the connections between her implants and Pachinko's rig. I cut my speed down to a crawl, trying to avoid attention from everyone else in the structure, and kept moving, around a pylon, up a level, waiting for Estelle to come back with good news. As it happened, that was pretty much the wrong call. Because eventually I wandered into a level where they, whoever they were waiting. In retrospect, yeah, they must have tapped into the same satellite Estelle had to set up such a perfect intercept. That might explain the rough connection, though those things are so old, it didn't really need a reason. Our eye-tooth connection was secure, so they weren't tracking that. But they'd had eyeballs on me long enough to have their operator paint my heat signature. I never did find out if they deliberately blocked the other ramps and the elevators to that floor, or if it was just my bad luck that there were no witnesses around. But I'd just recognized the dark green Serengeti parked across the lane up ahead when... the front wheel of my ped shot violently sideways, toppling the whole bike and dumping me onto the really, really hard polymer lot. I felt my sleeve shred, taking bits of skin with it, and I think I probably gasped, but I don't remember for sure. At least the riding gloves held up, so I didn't lose any flesh on my fingers. I do remember raising my head to see the Huacha lying on its side, the front wheel pretty well mangled. The package lying next to the bike, apparently unharmed, and right side up, thank God, and one mean-looking sun standing between me and it. Bald dome, tattooed neck, white leather jacket, and a glistening, black, scary, huge gun? I think the pain actually vanished washed completely away by stupefied shock. You guys are packing? You're gonna shoot me over a delivery of...
Not about the delivery, and you know it. It's about the contract, and you losers losing it. Nobody's getting shot unless you make me, and we're just gonna sit here for a while.
Who hired you? I asked more to keep him talking than in the hopes he'd actually tell me. I tried to think of Pachinko's main rivals. Alphonse? Papa J? I knew there were others, but my mind was still spinning across the lot and under someone's car.
Never you mind. Just sit quiet.
For a couple of minutes, I did just that, and I knew I should keep doing it. They were shooting at me over this whole mess. Well, okay, at the pen, but only so far. No telling how much further they'd go, not with B1 on the line. But damn it, I'm Pachinko's best. No way I was gonna be the one to crash his biggest contract.
Horn.
So many reasons it might not work. If Estelle didn't know what I meant, or didn't realize I was talking to her, or if the crash had knocked out the PED's receiver, if my skid across the ground had damaged my eye tooth. She got it. Bless her. The proximity warning on the bike started to squeal, and the guy standing over me with the 11mm spun around to look. He probably heard me coming, started to turn back, but by then I was up. I slammed my head into his face. I still had the helmet on, scraped and battered as it had gotten. At the same time, I kneed him in the QQs. He pretty much collapsed, and I yanked the gun out of his limp fist before he hit the floor.
Jimmy, what the hell's going on over there?
I bent over the Huacha. Nope, not going anywhere, and scooped up the package in my other hand. The case was pretty awkward, even with the handles, but at least it wasn't heavy.
I'll explain in a minute.
I stuck the gun into my waistband and broke into a jog.
First, get me the upway schedule for this station, quick.
Had to ditch the helmet, of course, made me way too visible. So did the package, but there really wasn't much I could do about that. I just had to hope I could shake the satellite's paint in the crowds and avoid any eyes they might have on the streets. I ran my dub drive through the reader, fell in with all the other commuters in line, and shuffled into the first monorail traveling vaguely in the right direction.
Time.
2023.
Damn. I'd spent longer trying to dodge those bastards than I thought. I stood, my free hand on the passenger rail, and gritted my teeth with every passing second.
I got the satellite back.
Let me guess. There's a whole crowd of people around me, and we're all moving in the same direction.
No need for snark, troll.
Next time, you make the run, and we'll see who gets snarky. And that was about all we said for the long, far, far too long ride downtown and up into the Ivory Heights. The upway trembled as it glided to a stop at the platform, and I squeezed through the doors as soon as they opened, trying to lose myself in the throng. I was close now, only a few blocks and bridgeways from the B1 complex, but there was no telling what still might happen.
It shows people converging on you, Jimmy. Hard to tell how many in this crowd, but there's at least 3 very clearly making a beeline for you. Maybe more.
Of course there were. Even if they'd lost track of me on the satellite, they knew what train I'd gotten on and where I was going. Duh. Where?
You're 190, you're 290, and you're 330, give or take.
I immediately spun to my right and picked up the pace, squeezing between commuters, yanking hard any time the package snagged on someone. Down a side corridor, through a really old-fashioned turnstile, only there to keep people from rushing, I think, and out, onto the next platform. I immediately made a sharp left and dashed up a flight of stairs. Only someone right behind me, or watching for me from the second platform, could have seen which way I went.
No good, Jimmy. They're still coming up behind you.
Or, of course, anyone who was tapped into the same satellite we were, and had already marked my signature. Damn it! Tell Pachinko I expect a bonus for this like you wouldn't believe. And if he even tries to charge me for repairs to the PED, I'm going to work for Alphonse. I could try hopping levels. The old satellite feeds aren't too good at determining elevation. but there were only so many floors to the Upway station. I needed a way to get out of here and to make following me tough. If I could reach the tubes or the bridgeways and flag a yellow, I could get to B1 before they could stop me. I hoped. I swerved, moving into one of the busiest lanes of foot traffic. It was late enough at night that, while the place was crowded, it wasn't packed. Hopefully, that'd be enough to keep anyone from getting hurt. I waited until I wasn't too far from an exit, took a deep breath, and then I pulled the 11mm and fired a 3-slug burst into the ceiling. Alarms blared to make your ears bleed as every emergency sensor in the place went off at once. I'd already dropped the gun and kicked it away before anyone had even started screaming, so odds were good that nobody saw me pull the trigger, and none of the cameras that tracked my way at the sound of the shots had caught me. People were running, pushing, and shoving toward the nearest exit, and I went with them, letting the press of the throng carry me. If the guys following me had been far enough back, I could hope they were being shoved toward a different exit. But even if not, they sure as hell weren't closing with me anytime soon. I'm pretty sure Estelle was yelling something in my ear, but I couldn't begin to make out what it might be. The flood of people pouring out of the station spilled into the nearest street, snarling traffic something fierce. Horns and alarms blared, people shouted words that you'd want censored on your kids' message boards, and for just a few minutes, it was actually quicker to move by foot than by car. I sprinted away as fast as I could manage, and I was far from the only one, so nobody should suspect me of anything, until I was a couple dozen yards away. A quick glance over the edge of the street determined that the next bridgeway was only about a dozen feet down. I ran on until I was above a walkway, scrambled over the guardrail, and dropped. I actually would have stuck the landing pretty well, except that the walkways around here move at a good clip. Great for pedestrians to get where they're going, not so great for jumping onto. I felt my ankle turn and almost collapsed into a few startled passersby, catching myself only by clinging to a handy overcoat. I knew I hadn't broken it. I've done that before. But I wouldn't be doing any more sprinting for a few days.
Let go of me.
Sorry, sir.
I limped ahead as fast as my legs and the walkway would carry me. I hopped off at a gap between moving sections and turned toward traffic. I knew it wouldn't be long at this time of night. Yep, there. Within less than half a minute, I'd flagged down a yellow, a nondescript four-wheeler, hopped in the back, and jammed my dub drive into the port.
Where to?
B1, southwest entrance B, please. You get me there in 10 minutes, I'll double the fare. And Pachinko will pay me back every damn dub of it, too. The driver, an old guy with more wrinkles than your favorite quilt, grinned around a mouthful of two white teeth. Polymers, obviously.
You got it.
In the rear view, I saw his eyes flicker to the package.
Don't you guys usually drive your own wheels?
Mechanical problems. I leaned back and closed my eyes for the trip. Estelle reported a few minutes later.
The Serengeti's tailing you again, but he's hanging way back.
I glanced ahead. Not through the windshield, but at the 12-gauge auto pump sitting in a clasp on the dashboard. That's because nobody's dumb enough to mess with yellows in this town. The driver, obviously accustomed to people carrying on half conversations behind him, grinned back at me again.
Could be.
B1 Plaza, up ahead.
Estelle?
Yeah?
Thanks.
You know it, troll.
I smiled, tapped the readout beside the drive port to enter the total, and hopped out. It was only a few dozen steps to the monolithic ivory, but every second I was exposed felt like forever, and not just because of the throbbing in my ankle. As I approached the doors, I deactivated my implant.
Charlemagne Thursday.
B1 jams outside signals anyway, except for their own lines. No sense in keeping the implant active and wasting minutes. Even though there were plenty of other people, it felt like my footsteps, echoing between the marble floors and the arched ceiling, were the only sounds to be heard. I glanced back over my shoulder and saw my friend from the garage standing outside, glaring at me and shouting something impolite at the other guys with him. It probably wasn't wise, but I waved at him. I don't lip read, but I'm pretty sure his expletives got even more explicit. The receptionists gave me a pretty thorough once-over, given how much the mess I looked, but sent me on up. The elevator was a quick ride, and I found myself facing another marble counter and a massive oak door. Hello, Miranda!
Jimmy, good to see you.
The middle-aged blonde behind the desk frowned.
Are you all right?
We'll be. No worries.
Oh, well, go right in. They've been waiting eagerly.
The big door swung open. Straightening up, I hefted the package and walked through. The room was wood-paneled, lushly carpeted, and stared out over a panorama of the entire city. From here, it looked like a neon cobweb. A huge donut-shaped table seated almost 24 men and women who had clearly been here a while. Jackets hung over the backs of chairs and top buttons were open. Two people on the far side rose. One was a Japanese woman I didn't know but recognized from various news programs. Couldn't remember her name, but I'm pretty sure she runs the Maeda Mori Corporation. The other, a guy with slick, backed gray hair and a suit that probably cost more than every car I'd pass on the way, was Mr. Threadwell, VP in charge of B1's local offices. But more than any of this, I couldn't tear my eyes off the old-fashioned clock hanging on the wall behind them. It read 2057. 3 minutes to spare. I almost cried.
Jimmy, isn't it?
Threadwell came around the room.
Yes, sir.
I hefted the package onto the table.
Cutting it pretty close today. Gee, good lord, son, you look awful. Tough time getting here?
Nothing I couldn't handle, sir. You know pachinkos. However we have to get there, we'll get there.
Well, you'll have to tell me the story someday.
He carefully opened the package and offered me a wide smile.
Tell Miranda to double your usual tip and give your boss my best.
I will, sir. Thank you so much.
As the clock turned over to 21:00, I limped from the boardroom. Vigorous debate over who'd ordered the pepperoni and who had the veggies with extra cheese spilling out into the hall behind me.
My kids like extra cheese.
I ordered extra cheese.
Where were you?
Right here.
We've been talking about extra cheese.
So that's the story.
Hopefully you enjoyed it.
Yeah, did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really interesting story.
This was fun to do.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in to listening. Today's episode's readers, I should say, are Heather, Heather's coworker Riley, Heather's son, Seth, me, our friend Casey, and our 8-year-old friend Rhiannon. Music is courtesy of Looperman and YouTube. Props for them for providing that royalty free. You can find more info on the show notes, or there's going to be even more information because there's more room in the YouTube description below. Let us know what you think of the show. If you got any comments or ideas, you can DM me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. It's at Skiffily Podcast. If any of the readers have like social media presence, I'll put links for them too. And then also, you can support the podcast on Patreon. Patrons get exclusive access to posts and scripts, and they participate in community discussions and polls. You can also get personalized readings, patrons, if you patronize. Personalized readings at a higher enough tier. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'll put a link to the Patreon page in the video description, and perhaps even in the podcast notes. If you can't support us financially, that's fine. You can also leave comments and reviews, let other people know about the podcast.
Let us know what you liked.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we could do better.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Perhaps next time.
You know, I feel like if I get a bunch of hate, that's still probably still good for the podcast. So if you just leave a bunch of vitriol below, I don't know what I'm asking for.
Yeah, be careful.
I'm opening Pandora's box here. Thank you for listening, and tune in next time for episode 22.